This show is part of the Pod Tyrant Network. For more podcasts, interviews, and content, visit podtyrant.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with an honorary guardian of the Tytherian Hive, Adam Farmer.
I'll take it. Yeah, I'll be an honorary guardian. By the moons I honor thee, right?
Could there be one of those, though? I don't know. The Doctor's one, so can there be more than one?
I am the Doctor, so I guess it fits, right?
That would be sweet.
Yeah,
it'd be a nice reveal. We'd probably get a lot more listeners.
it's the end of the. It's the Christmas special reveal. We'll just make it official then.
Starring Adam Farmer as the 13th Doctor. You've got the look for it. I can buy it.
Okay. Well, I'll just leave that there. I'm not even going to try to make some comment on that one. I'll just let that one roll.
Now we just need some really good Photoshop images of you in front of the TARDIS.
Yeah, maybe we can call on our podcast buddies over at Talking Time Lords. They can do some solid Photoshop work for us.
Oh, man. We are on episode 68 of Bad Wolf Radio. And we are going to be reviewing The Empress of Mars tonight, which is a Mark Gatiss episode.
Yeah. I mean, I love that guy. This is going to be good.
Yeah, he gets a lot of criticism from us, but we'll see. Maybe, we'll see if he was able to redeem himself in this season of Doctor Who. His last showing for us was a consensus not good.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty much across the board, right? That was rough.
Yes, but I will say this. After watching this episode, I was compelled to go back and watch another episode related to this episode, which was also written by Mark Gatiss. And, I may have changed my opinion a little bit on a couple things, so we'll get to that. But before we get to that, before we get to our review of Empress of Mars, there have been not really much news going on right now, but probably a couple things we can mention. And should we save the talk of Eaters of Light till after the episode review, or should we get into that now?
Yeah, let's save it for after.
Okay, we'll save it for after the review of Empress of Mars. But there was a little bit of news surrounding, of all people, not the current showrunner of Doctor Who, previous showrunner of Doctor Who, Russell Davies.
Yeah, when I saw his name pop up in the headline, I had to take like a double, triple take on that to make sure I wasn't looking at something that was, 10 years old. Like that, it was legitimately talking about what we are currently thinking about with this Doctor.
He had a strong enough run with Doctor Who, and he was popular enough with the fans that people still care about what he says and what he thinks when it comes to Doctor Who.
Oh, so, heck yes.
So when his name pops up, you pay attention. You're like, oh, what does Russell have to say about this stuff?
So what did Russell have to say about this stuff?
Well, he says, and not much. I mean, it's enough for us to mention, but there's not really much to the story. But he knows who the next Doctor is.
Is there any hints that he's dropped? Or are they all very generic pronouns that he used?
I'm pretty sure he did not accidentally say he or she, so it's still up in the air on the gender of the next Doctor.
Yeah, reading through, very very neutral, leaving it to them. I do know who it is. I know that we've talked about this before. Doctor Who is notorious for essentially leaking their own big reveals. And so we kind of knew that this was coming. The casting was going to happen. It seems like there's been a very, very large amount of speculation as to who the individual would be stepping into the 13th. I, for one, think it's cool that we at least know that they've cast it. We'll see how long it stays a secret, or how long before they do the whole public huge conference announcement, right?
Right. Yeah, before we get kind of the fanfare that typically surrounds these sort of things. It's still up in the air on Pearl Mackey, though. You know, we heard early on that she's definitely not going to be in the next season. She's just a one-season companion that's going to be leaving with Capaldi. But then that kind of quieted down. And now I've seen her in interviews recently, even at Philadelphia Comic Con, when that came up in the panel. Somebody mentioned one of the audience members asking a question. Basically asked the question in a way that was basically like, hey, since this is your only season of Doctor Who, and you could tell Pearl was kind of like taken aback, like, wait, what do you mean this is my only season of Doctor Who? So, it is interesting that, you know, we were so sure that she was going to be gone, but now it's been pretty quiet on the companion front.
Yeah, as soon as the series started, all of that essentially fell quiet. I mean, it maybe not entirely fell quiet. I think, though, like, the nuance of the conversation shifted from this is definitely going to be one and done to, oh, wow, it's kind of sad this is going to be one and done. Because it seems like, at least from what I'm seeing and reading, fandom of Doctor Who, fellow Whovians as a whole, have gotten behind her as a character. I remember just through the first couple episodes, article after article after article was saying Pearl Mackey is incredible. Bill is amazing. Like, these high praise for her as a companion. Maybe that saved her character. Maybe it was just enough without having everything else set in stone going into series 11 to be like, you know what? There is some room to make an adjustment. I don't know. I'm curious to see, because, like you said, there's essentially been nothing said about her future, and for that matter, like Nardi as well, right? We still don't know what's up with him.
Did you just call him Nardi?
That I did.
Oh man, yeah. I would say that it's very possible that they didn't cast the next companion, almost with a wait and see type of attitude, to see how fans, you know, reacted to Pearl Mackey. And if she was such a hit, you know, why replace her if you know, she's bringing in an audience? I, as a fan, I've not loved her, but you're right. The reaction overall in fandom has been positive. I think I'm an outlier that has not really liked the character. I do really like the actress. The character is kind of like hit and miss with me. Very strong first episode, pretty weak beyond that. So part of me is kind of thinking, oh, maybe, you know, I'm hoping for someone different. But, you know, this last episode, the Empress of Mars that we're about to review, she actually did a better job for me. You know, in my mind, what I wanted to see from her, there was more of that. There were glimpses of that. So we'll see. You know, I wouldn't be sad to see her go, but if she starts to get a lot stronger toward the end of the season, and maybe that was the intention all along, that her character would grow and kind of hit her stride toward the end of the season, that maybe that would, you know, make me want her to kind of continue into the next season.
Yeah, I'm curious just to see how all of that would play out, right? Because the university has been this huge staple where they always go back to. The doctor has an office, she works as the cook or what have you in the cafeteria. She's a cafeteria worker, there we go. And even this past episode, the TARDIS went back to his office. That's where the vault is. If the doctor regenerates, I don't necessarily think he's going to have a job at the university anymore. And I'm just interested to see how, like, that transition goes if Pearl sticks around, if everything kind of continues on. I don't know. It feels like a clean break might make more sense story-wise, but she has been a hit.
The doctor could just, you know, he could replace himself. You know, one professor leaves the university, another one replaces him.
Yeah. Oh, they all go by the doctor. Right. None of them have names. They just kind of show up.
No, I agree. I think a clean break makes sense, especially with a new showrunner coming in. Give the doctor a new, fresh starting point, as opposed to kind of what's been going on with Moffat's version of the doctor. So does that mean a new companion? A lot of times we see companions carry over. So it's been done both ways, and it's been done both ways successfully, I'd say. So I think it could work either way with Pearl. You know, they bring her into the next doctor, you get that whole companion having to transition to a new doctor and what that does to their psyche. That's always interesting to watch. Or you could get a kind of Matt Smith, Amy Pond type situation where they're both meeting each other for the first time. So yeah. Either thing could work. So we'll see. And the next few episodes may shift my opinion on if I want her to stick around or not.
So if you had to choose, if you were making the call right now, would you go either, neither, or both? Would you choose Nardole? Would you choose Bill? Would you choose neither, or do you want both of them to go? You make the call.
If I'm going just off of what I've seen so far, nothing against either of the actors, I would like to see a fresh start, complete, fresh, clean slate. New characters, new doctor. That's it.
Characters die or they get left behind?
No, I don't necessarily want anybody to die. that can add some drama. And, you know, I actually do enjoy when characters die, not because I enjoy death, but because I liked the drama that that brings and kind of the urgency of a story. You know, if you know they're willing to kill characters, it kind of gives you a little bit more like, oh, crap, they're going to do that again later on, you know. Whereas if nobody ever dies, it kind of takes away from some of the drama. So... Okay. I don't want them to die, but if one of them died, I wouldn't be completely upset. But yeah, I mean, Nardole, he's kind of one of those characters that I wouldn't want to see him around too long. He's going to be nice to remember, but I don't want him to nice. Be kind of a constant companion of the Doctor's.
Yeah. Okay.
So, what about you?
I only ask the questions. I don't answer them.
That's not true. Come on.
Yeah, I think I'd go with neither. I think I want to see a clean break. As far as how they go, I don't know. I have a hard time feeling like the Doctor would just walk away from either of them. So I kind of feel like something dramatic is going to need to happen. But I think I would go into next series neither and just kind of have them left behind somewhere.
Yeah. I kind of want a happy ending for Bill just because I feel like she's had a hard time coping with all this stuff so far this season.
Yeah.
I don't know if she could handle a dramatic ending. And not, I don't know. I just don't want to happen to her what happened to, let's say, Donna.
Yeah.
You know, something like that where she can't remember anything. You know, I want kind of a happy ending for her. She meets somebody and goes off into the sunset.
Meets Puddle Girl again.
Puddle Girl comes back for her, maybe that'd be kind of cool. Yeah, so more thoughts on this probably, or more thoughts surrounding Bill, but we will talk about that stuff in the actual episode review.
Okay, cool.
And beyond that news, I don't know if you had anything else you want to talk about. I think everything else is kind of surrounding the next episode, so we'll save that for toward the end of our Empress of Mars review, or at the end of that.
Yeah, the only other thing that I wanted to mention is that there have been a few articles popping up where interviewing Chibnall and the whole idea of he didn't want to commit to it first, and then BBC wooed him, and then he shared his ideas and he expected them to say, or he shared his ideas for the show moving forward, expected them to say, let's talk about it. They responded, great. And then someone asked him, what about the idea of a single storyline for the entire series 11? And he said, yes. The BBC wanted someone bold and risky. What are your thoughts about a single storyline for the entire series?
I think I would love that, but maybe not as the formula for Doctor Who going forward. you know, forever, but maybe just give us like one season, just try it out. Because I love TV shows that are a continuous story, that every episode kind of builds on the next, and it's this kind of through line that everything's connected. Starting point, ending point. As much as I like the rewatchability of Doctor Who, because you can go back and just watch an individual storyline. Usually it's just an episode. Sometimes it's two or three. But you can at any time. You can just go back and watch an episode of Doctor Who and you get a complete story.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I want Doctor Who to become this thing where it's this continuous story that relies on previous episodes. But I actually do kind of think that'd be cool just for one season.
I think it'd be fun. And I feel like we've had glimpses of that, right? Like, the whole idea of the silence will fall, and some of these bigger story arcs that never really panned out to be anything out of the ordinary. Even this season, like the vault and who's in the vault. Like, we've had bits and pieces of this bigger storyline running through different episodes. I think it all depends on how it's handled, but I would be interested to see what it looked like if it seriously was every episode working towards the exact same end. I think that'd be interesting to play out, like you said, for a season. I'm up for something risky and bold. I think it'd be fun to see what happens for a series.
Yeah, let them experiment a little. I think right now it might be the time with Doctor Who to try something different, try something new. We've talked about even the casting of the Doctor and different things they could do with that and change things up. So if Chibnall's that risk taker and that's who they hired to do the job, you know, bring it on.
Yeah, and from what I believe I've seen, this series is set for another 5 series. So Doctor Who is set for another 5 series. We don't have like a, oh man, if this next series is terrible, it's not going to go anywhere. He has a little bit of a cushion to try things out before he really needs to start getting concerned about the future.
I think we're ready to jump into this review of Empress of Mars.
Yeah, let's do this.
All right, so this one was written by Mark Gatiss, which we had already mentioned earlier, directed by Wayne Yip, and this is story number 273. And this one is... So this one had a lot of unique elements. This was different than I think what we've gotten so far, and I'll just say it right off the bat, I was pleasantly surprised by what Mr. Gatiss brought us.
Yeah, to be honest, I was surprised as well for all the crap that we give him for the different episodes, especially for the Mukdamen, the sand monsters. Like, it's I was surprised, pleasantly surprised, as we jumped into this, even from the very get-go. It was intriguing, and he gave us another bootstrap paradox where they jump in and they see this message, and then because they saw that message, they so go someplace, and that message only gets placed because they went someplace. So I liked it. He even added some fun timey-wimey stuff to it.
Yeah, there was a timey-wimey element to that. That I actually, it's one of the things about Doctor Who I really like. So I like it when they play around with that stuff. And I love that. I love that element where you jump in, the Doctor just shows up at NASA, interrupting whatever was going on there. And it started out in a humorous tone. All three characters, you know, of our main characters are there kind of making these little quips. And NASA's all confused, like, who are these people that just showed up? You see this message, and then it all ties in kind of to the end. So I, right off the bat, just the opening scene at NASA, I was already like, oh, cool, this is good.
Yeah, it like you said, it got off to a very strong start. There were even things throughout the episode, be it the movie references, that we haven't really seen out of Bill since the very first episode, the pilot, where she's talking about sci-fi and Netflix and different things like that. That part of her character where she seems very in tune with sci-fi type things seemed to have disappeared. And yet here she's talking about Terminator and The Thing. Those things have returned as well.
Yeah, and that Yeah, we get a few movie references throughout the episode, including Terminator, which she talks about. She asked the doctor about it. He's like, "What are you talking about?" She's like, "You've never seen Terminator? It's got killer robots." He's like, "Oh, I'll put it on my list." You know.
Yeah.
So it was some fun back and forth with that. And yeah, we had heard before the season even started that there was going to be kind of these references to sci-fi or pop culture that the doctor just wasn't going to understand. And this episode was definitely an example of that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this was like outside of the first episode where it was just vaguely mentioned. I think that was this episode. Like, there's no other real memory that I have of her mentioning anything that would be somewhat similar to this and having that back and forth with the doctor.
I feel like in the Smile episode, maybe there was a couple that maybe we're not thinking of, but I thought there were a couple small ones dropped throughout. This was the biggest example of it, but I feel like there was maybe a little bit more than just that first episode.
Possibly. Covering our bases. You know what happens on Facebook.
Right. So we joke around about how there's these formula stories, and we get the separated from the TARDIS storyline. Like, right off the bat, Nardole like accidentally flies it somewhere, which I guess they find out it wasn't really his fault. But yeah, they get separated from the TARDIS, which forces them to be stuck on Mars for a little bit, which allows them to take part in this adventure.
Yeah, that was the formula, right? And we talked about it. You mentioned it. It forced you to go back and watch another episode that contained the Ice Warriors, and you messaged me and was like, "Hey, you should go back and watch it. There's so many different parallels." That was one of those parallels, right? Where the TARDIS just up and disappears. Happened the same way in the Cold War, where they land and the TARDIS disappears. At least in the Cold War, though, we had some sort of an explanation in regards to the TARDIS flies away when it's in danger. This one, the TARDIS just up and left. There was no explanation.
That was in Cold War.
Yeah.
I was getting it mixed up because, I watched this episode, then I watched Cold War right after, and I remember that explanation, but I thought they gave that explanation in this episode.
No, this one, Nardole just steps in the TARDIS, and all of a sudden, boom, it's gone.
And the TARDIS is just like, "I'm out of here."
Yeah.
TARDIS space. It's one of those things, the TARDIS being, sentient in a way that, the TARDIS maybe left knowing that the doctor needed to stick around there for a little while. So I guess that could be the explanation.
What did you think of the scene where there's fire and Bill starts to take off her helmet and the doctor says, "No, let me be the first one," and then we hear the, and then you look and Nardole already has his helmet off.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I don't care if there's fire or not. I'm not taking my helmet off on a strange planet. They were pretty
physics.
Bold.
Basic physics.
Funny that the doctor was the least bold in that situation, because being the traveler that he is, you would think he would have been the first one to pop his helmet off, but the other two were just like, "Oh, fire."
I'm glad that they had that, though, right? Like, to me, that's one of those details that's so often missed, where it's just like, "Oh, we'll just take off our helmet. We're on Mars. Yeah, we're below the surface, but we'll just take it off." And to have the fire there, so there's some like visual representation of, "Oh, there must be oxygen." It was. I appreciated that, and then the funny exchange, where it could have been a very bold death,
right? So we get, I guess, kind of the main story of this episode is that we have these Victorian era British soldiers who are on Mars, which is this weird kind of. I really like what they did with this, and this is part of the reason why I enjoy the episode. I really like the episodes where they go back in time. But most of the time when they go back in time, there's not a sci-fi element to that, other than there being some sort of, crazy alien monster or whatever. But the fact that they're on another planet and there's aliens and there's spacesuits and all that, but it's back in the 1800s. Was a cool twist that I don't know if they've done that in Doctor Who before. Maybe they have, and I'm just not thinking of it. But to me, it was a very unique way of telling a story, and I got on board right away with it because of that.
Yeah, I mean, usually they take those sci-fi elements and they thrust it into the medieval or old time environment. But this time, although it was still the 1800s, they took that, the old time people, and thrust them into the sci-fi element. Because we had spaceships and stuff show up with Lady Me, the girl who lived, where spaceships all of a sudden show up and there's the Lion Man and all that stuff.
Right.
But the setting was old. And here we have old people. And honestly, like, after watching it a couple times, it still is this weird disconnect to me where I'm like, they seem pretty chill to be on Mars. Like, for being Victorian era people, they're pretty chill to just be up there.
Yeah, there were definitely some unanswered questions. You know, they got to the planet. That makes sense. They used Friday's ship.
And they fixed Friday's ship.
So, yeah, that's one of the things where it's like, okay, how did they fix it? How did they know how to fix it? I'm guessing because the cave system there is where the oxygen was, but they had to get from the ship to the cave system. So did they all have steampunk spacesuits?
Which those steampunk spacesuits were freaking sweet.
Yeah, like, it was.
They had, like, honestly, my faucet valve outside. They had it on their suit. It was awesome.
Yeah, and there was like a phonograph speaker thing popping out the side of it. Like, yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, it looked really cool, very awesome visual. But then I was thinking, okay, did they design these spacesuits because they knew they were going to Mars? How did they know how to build a spacesuit in the 1800s? There's a lot of kind of like nitpicky, unanswered questions. But if you kind of push all that aside and don't worry about the details, it was actually a really fun type of story to tell in Doctor Who.
Yeah, and I think that's when Doctor Who gets away with it, right? Like, some of the previous episodes, we had these questions, we had these disconnects, and this it wasn't fun. And so it gave us space to focus on these things that just flat out don't make sense. But in this episode, it's a fun story, it's a fun situation, and so there are these disconnects, but it's like, there's Victorian people under the surface of Mars, who cares how their spacesuits work? Like, they have freaking steampunk spacesuits. It's pretty awesome. That's when the story is fun. I give Doctor Who much more of a pass than when the story is rough and then those elements stick out like a sore thumb.
And one of my favorite things about the British soldiers was how legit their speech was, the way they talked to each other. They didn't sound like, you know, anybody from our time, and they didn't even sound like other characters I've heard, you know, in other representations of the Victorian era. The writer of this episode, I'm assuming Mark Gatiss did most of this on his own, did a really good job of like pulling up crazy phrases from this era that just made it feel legit.
I honestly Googled a couple of those phrases because I wanted to
see if he was making them up.
Well, because I'm like, what in the world does that even mean? At one point, well, number one, going back to the characters, like, again, they were fun. To me, they felt somewhat cliche of like the debonair tossing his hair back. He's got the mustache type of.
Yeah, he looked perfect.
I know.
When he pulled that helmet off, I was like, yes, that is exactly what I would expect somebody from that era to look like.
Exactly. Like, he looks like a somewhat caricature of something that you would see in one of those Jane Eyre movies. Like, he seems like a Sense and Sensibility character, just somewhat cartoony. And I loved it. But at one point he says, "The deuce she is." And I'm like, what in the world is the deuce she is? Because in our vernacular, deuce means something entirely different. So I was trying to figure out, like, what does this mean? And Google has nothing.
Yeah, that was the one that kind of, that exact phrase is the one that I questioned in my mind. Like, oh, that sounds like they were just trying to kind of make something sound old-fashioned that's not really something. But some of the other things they were saying, I don't know. I bought into it. Maybe he was just kind of like pulling one over on us. But to me, it seemed pretty legit. Like, the one part he was like, "He'll be right as ninepence come dawn."
Yeah, yeah.
Be a sport. You'll get your share of the rhino. Like, things like that. Like, what are you talking about? But
And Jackdaw, which, again, like Jackdaw.
Jackdaw,
like,
perfect like, name. Yeah.
I know, right? But him breaking into the song about the poor as he's chipping the emeralds or the gems off of the Empress of Mars,
yes,
her coffin thing. Like,
nice touch.
Exactly. Like, nice touches. Things that make sense. Although there's those elements that are just terribly disconnected from how in the world did this work. There were enough of those touches where it's like, you know what? It works. It's legit.
Yeah, definitely. So we were talking about Nardole leaving in the TARDIS on accident. And I actually was just thinking of this. Is it possible that Missy called the TARDIS back to kind of, as almost a way of an excuse of getting out of the vault and kind of getting herself into the TARDIS? Did she do something maybe to the TARDIS or have some way of calling the TARDIS back?
I mean, she can make a gun out of leaves. So
she claims.
So she claims. So it definitely seems like it's possible. That another solid part, right? We're getting just these glimpses of Missy. And that glimpse of her at the end, it was slightly unsettling at the end, her interaction with the doctor.
Yeah,
but I don't want to jump there just yet.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Yeah, it was. It was unsettling. That's a good word for it. So we get Nardole going back, and he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know how to get the TARDIS back to where he needs to go to get the doctor. So who else does he turn to but Missy? So I thought it was really interesting, you know, to bring her into the picture in this way. Because, you know, you're looking at the previews and kind of knowing what this episode is about, it almost seemed like, okay, they're going away from the university. This is going to be a Missy-less episode.
Yeah.
But they still brought her in, and I think it's going to propel forward what's going on in these next few episodes and in her role that she's going to play.
Yep.
So.
Totally.
So we get a return of the Ice Warriors. Seems like Gatiss's favorite classic monster, apparently, because he's now brought them back into the show a couple times. I didn't remember too much about their appearance in Cold War. Admittedly, now Cold War came on before we even had Bad Wolf Radio.
That it did.
So this was pre, you know, watching episodes two or three times to prep for a podcast. I think I only ever watched that episode when it came on TV. And just whatever mindset I was in at the time, I just didn't enjoy it enough to ever watch it again. So having watched this episode, it made me curious to go back and watch that one and remind myself of these Ice Warriors. And I went back and watched it, and actually, I don't know if it was just because I was happy to see Matt Smith again, but I actually liked it. Some good actors in it, too. I don't know if you watch Game of Thrones, but there's a couple pretty solid actors from Game of Thrones that were in that episode as well.
Why am I not surprised? Game of Thrones and Harry Potter, right?
Right.
Those are the people that build Doctor Who. I mean, like I said, you messaged me, said that I should go back and watch it, that I might like it more than what I originally thought. And similar to you, I think I did only watch Cold War one time, and I think I enjoyed it, but not to the point where it was like, ooh, that's a good episode, I'll go watch it again. There is something about Doctor Who that if you go back and you rewatch an episode, I don't know if it's nostalgia, I don't know if it's just like that feeling of something familiar, what it is. I always like an episode if I go back and watch it. I don't think there's been a single episode that I've gone back and watched, older episode that I've gone back and watched that I haven't been like, oh, wow, that is a fun episode. Cold War, that's a really fun episode. And we got like good Clara. We got uncertain Clara, like new adventure Clara.
Yeah, I didn't mind seeing Clara again.
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was, I mean, maybe it was because it was coming right off the heels of watching this episode, but it was nice to see a little bit more about the Ice Warriors. It didn't, you know, I don't know, I just didn't have good memories of this one, and so I was pleasantly surprised that I enjoyed it as much as I did. But I will say this, it does show, and I don't know if it was intentional, but it did show some parallels to this episode, to Empress of Mars, that almost made the writing seem a little lazy. because there were some elements to the story that were like exactly the same. It was like this story on a submarine, same story on Mars.
Yeah.
You know, because they got separated from the TARDIS. That happened. You have one singular ice warrior who had been frozen for 5,000 years, like the exact same amount of time.
Yep.
There was another kind of big similarity.
Mutually assured destruction. Like at the end, that is part of the resolution, is this mutually assured destruction.
True. And then you kind of had the dynamic of two of the people that were in the military in the sub. It was a captain and one of his people. And then on Mars, it was the colonel and his captain. But where you had the one that was in charge, but there was like another guy that was kind of trying to usurp him a little bit, or his authority. That was, you know, in both episodes as well. So that to me was the only kind of negative in going back and rewatching it, was like, okay, Gatiss, you either were intentionally mirroring this story or you got a little lazy and used some of the same story elements.
It's interesting though, because one of the conversations that has gone on throughout series 10 is these recurring storylines that people are saying they're just going back and copying old episodes and just putting them in new form. This is one of those where it's like, maybe so. Like, there were enough parallels. I mean, the show's been on for 50 years though, so you're going to start repeating some of these things.
Yeah, but I'm cool with
it. It seemed
that
very, very similar.
Yeah, I'm cool with it. If they do that with like a classic episode, they say, oh, let's take this classic episode and kind of modernize it, because a lot of people haven't seen the classic series, wouldn't pick up on it, and enough time has passed. But when we're talking about Matt Smith, that was the last Doctor.
Right.
You know, that's not enough time has passed. So, I mean, it was, and there were enough about the stories that were different that, you know, there were just a few elements that were similar, but overall it wasn't like a straight up copy. At least I didn't see it that way.
No, I wouldn't say it's a straight up copy, but like you said, there are some of those main milestones or cornerstones of the episode. They looked an awful lot alike.
Right. So we get introduced to, we think it's Friday, the singular ice warrior. He's in a way become subservient to these soldiers. I guess because they saved his life. Part of the deal was they're going to bring him back to Mars, bring him back to his home in exchange for him helping them like find these riches. But they don't really ever find the riches. And everyone's getting kind of sad about it or whatever. They want to go back home, or the ship is wrecked. They can't go back home. But they do finally break through with this gargantua gun that they've been using, that they break through and find the tomb of the Empress of Mars. And that's where things start to get interesting.
Yeah, they break through. Jackdaw, which is only one of the cool names of the people of this episode.
Catch Love.
Catch Love.
That's another good one.
Jackdaw, Sergeant Major Peach, Vincey, Nibs. I mean, there's some solid names. So he gets a little greedy, spots something shiny, pulls out his buck knife to kind of pop it off, and then that's when all things go crazy, because the Empress of Mars wakes up. And she starts turning people into beach balls.
Man,
it's the weirdest thing.
How terrifying is that? Like, honestly, that was like one of the more, because it's almost comical yet gruesome all at the same time. The thought of somebody getting folded up into like basically, like you said, a beach ball. My son was, because my son takes an interest in watching Doctor Who, but he gets scared of it for obvious reasons, because it can be scary, especially to young kids. And so he always asks me before he watches an episode, is this going to be scary? In this episode, I told him it wasn't. I just didn't think there was anything that scary in it. Well, the idea of human beings being folded up into beach balls apparently was scary to him. He was terrified. He was like, Daddy, are they going to do that again? Are they going to fold those guys up? Or he's like, are they going to turn them into those round things? Like, he was really scared of it. So,
well, yeah, and they bounce. And like one I saw had like a hand sticking out of it. And it was just, I don't know. I didn't know whether to laugh or just be like weirded out or to think it was stupid. Like, I had no idea how to think of these. Like, who, when they're designing a weapon, thinks that that is effective? Like, hey, let's not just obliterate them. Let's just fold them into beach balls that bounce around. I guess on a battlefield, that would be pretty darn freaky, but I don't know. It was weird to me.
Right. Yeah. How does that weapon even work? Is it some kind of force field that it, you know, kind of goes around you and then just squeezes you into a ball?
That's it sucks part of you in. It inflates other parts of you. I don't know.
Yeah, it was disturbing. Yeah, I will say that. Even upon a rewatch, I was still kind of like cringing when it happened.
And again, like I wonder what in the world goes into Mark Geddes' mind that he's just like, you know what, this would be awesome. Like, well, we need eye booger monsters and we need guns that turn you into beach balls. Like, those are the scariest things in the world.
So Geddes gave us a bit of a slap in the face in this episode. I don't know if you picked up on it.
I guess I didn't.
So the episode of the eye booger monster episode, what was the title?
Sleep No More.
Okay. What did the Empress say when she was waking up her warriors?
Oh, she said sleep no more.
Multiple times.
Yeah.
Sleep no more, my warriors. Sleep no more. I was like, no, he did not. He just dropped the title of his last episode into the dialogue.
At any point in time, did they say Cold War?
I don't think so, but that would be interesting to try to pick that out. I wasn't even thinking of it. And I didn't catch this until the second watch.
Is this like a Mark Geddes Easter egg? He hides like titles of other episodes and
of his own episodes. I just thought it was funny because I think the only reason I caught it is because she says it numerous times, but sleep no more, I was like, no, he didn't. But I mean, but I kind of gave him a little, like, you know, tilt of the head, like respect for that, you know, because I'm sure he had to have heard the criticism for that episode. So he was willing to still reference it as opposed to kind of distance himself from it. You know, I'll give him some respect for that. He's owning up to it.
It's, you know what, he's done good work. As much guff as we give him, he's done good work.
Yeah. I mean, he's part of the Doctor Who family. So
he is.
We love him. But Let's give a shout out to the character actors, the secondary characters that they brought in for this episode. Big improvement from what we've gotten previously. I thought the guy that played Catch Love was great. Jackdaw was great. The Colonel was great. The only weak spot I would say is the Empress was maybe she was a bit overacting. But I thought they did a really good job in the casting for this one.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, they made the episode, right? Like, if you would have had anybody else in that position who was lesser by any stretch of the imagination, I don't think it would have been as enjoyable. I don't feel like we even saw the Doctor all that much throughout the episode. But those soldiers, and I would say, like, the Empress of Mars, she was pretty much off her rocker. So whatever overacting was going on there, I think it kind of fit with the character that they were trying to have. Like, she was just flat out crazy when she said, "I will show them mercy." And the Doctor's like, "Thank you." And she's like, "By killing them quickly." Like, those
kind of like the crazy space Viking.
Yeah.
Guy, I mean, where we were kind of like, yeah, it was cheesy, but it was meaningfully cheesy.
Yeah, I feel like that is exactly who or what she was, like, meaningfully cheesy. Even at the end where everything transpires, everything goes crazy, and the Colonel, like, stands before her baring his neck, and she gives that speech of, like, you will die as a soldier, but not today. It's just, like, those moments. She delivered them. They were cheesy, but it worked.
Yes. So I was a little confused about the reveal of the Colonel being a deserter and surviving the hangman's noose. Why was he given the command of this group, if that was the case? Like, shouldn't he have been once, you know, if... To me, it's kind of like, okay, if you are sentenced to death because you deserted and they catch you and they try to hang you and the hanging doesn't work, then they just shoot you, right? Like, they don't just say, oh, the hanging didn't work, you survived, and let's put you in charge of this mission that's going to Mars. I was a little confused about kind of all that. Was it a secret mission? Was the, you know, was the government not aware that they went? I don't know.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that either. And I was hoping upon a couple watch throughs that like something would finally click and make sense. And it never did. And I was even confused. Like I was sure the first time I watched through when he was saying that, oh, for cowardice, like plain and simple cowardice, that he was still covering something up. It seemed like there was something else there and that he really wasn't a coward. Like he did something entirely different. Because him being a coward and then being given command again made no sense to me. But yeah, that's one of those questions that I think did stick out like a sore thumb. I'm not entirely sure how he survived hanging and was still in charge.
And then Ketchlove was like,
knew.
Yeah. Like Ketchlove was covering for him. So then it's, yeah, it was, all of that was very interesting to me on, there's got to be more to that story in my own kind of head, you know, story. What I tried to come up with to reconcile it was some kind of doomed mission that they were like, yeah, let's send this group and hey, put that guy that survived hanging in charge, you know, because they didn't think anybody would come back alive. Or it was because he is the one that discovered the ship and saved Friday's life, and Friday only agreed to take them if that guy was put in charge.
Yeah.
So there's a couple options for you.
I'll go with your headcanon. Yeah. I'll go with your headcanon.
I try not to use the term headcanon because I hate headcanon. No, there's canon and there's not canon. We just don't know what's true with this one yet.
Take your Star Wars out of my Doctor Who.
Oh, man. So, yeah, so we get the Ice Warriors do wake up, you know, because she told them to sleep no more. And they slowly start to come to life. The doctor then tries to negotiate peace because he's telling her, hey, your planet is dead. You will not survive here. You need to work together with these people if you want to survive. But doesn't necessarily work out. So we get some more people dying in that gruesome way. I was surprised because they, you know, we have the character they introduced us to, kind of the younger soldier,
Vincey.
And I was like, okay, this is going to be the guy that lives. And they killed him. I couldn't believe they killed him. Yep. It was almost as bad as them killing whatever that kid's name was on the ice.
Yeah. I mean, I was convinced he was going to make it too. And then Ketchcliffe just threw him in front and ran away. And he turned into beach ball.
Yeah, he was talking about...
In like, all his puff.
A girl back home. He's talking about like the fields and the grass and all this stuff. You're like, oh, you know, poor guy. And then, yeah, he just dies in a gruesome way, just like everybody else.
Yep. I'm sorry. Like, it's just one of those things where he was
laughing.
Yeah, like,
it's not beach funny. Ball. He died.
It is. It is, though. Like, he's not really dead. He's just folded in on himself. He's still up there, bouncing around.
Bill was better this episode.
I just thought, like, right before someone gets shot, they say, hey, I have to bounce. Bah! Like that, there's so many things. Yeah, Bill was better this episode.
She was much more confident. She even volunteered herself to be a distraction for the doctor. She goes toe-to-toe with the Empress. I liked her this episode. She wasn't questioning everything the doctor did. She didn't seem like she was scared of everything. She was much more companion-like. So give us more of this, Bill, for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. Like, when the doctor said, I need a distraction, she says, you have one. Like, no hesitation, nothing. And then she yelled out to Araxa. Like, she didn't try to do anything else. She ran and she moved the gargantua gun so that it shot the ceiling. Like, she took action when action was needed to be taken. And she wasn't really scared of the Ice Warriors at all. She
was holding Friday's hand at one point.
I know. Like, she knew what was up. Again, that is a good companion right there. I agree. Like, if we had more of that moving forward, it's just so strange how she has her ups and her downs. It's like different companions in different episodes. I'm not entirely sure how. I don't feel like we've had this really, like, growth period or this rounded arc of how she's developed and how she's changed. It's any given episode, she could go up or down.
Yeah. So we got a Frozen reference.
We did get a Frozen reference.
Doctor kind of threw it back.
Like he could have said like "Let It Go" or something.
Yeah, he didn't. I'm glad they didn't do that. The "Let It Go" reference is been done. It's overdone. But the fact that he was just, you know, Bill kept saying this and that. Oh, it's like this movie. It's like that movie. And then the Doctor, he didn't know any of those like major sci-fi movies, but apparently he knows Disney movies. So I thought that was, we've gotten a Lion King reference previously in Doctor Who. We've gotten some Harry Potter references. Now we're getting a Frozen reference. They don't shy away from referencing other big franchise or big studio movies.
I did want to mention, because we have Bill mentioning the movies early in the episode. We have the Doctor mentioning Frozen at the end of it. In the middle, though, when they're sitting at the table and Bill asks, "Why do you call him Friday?" And Ketchlove responds, "Robinson Crusoe." Like, and Bill just looks absolutely puzzled. It's a book. So it feels like Geddes like threw it back at her even at that point, whereas like she's been, you don't know this movie, and then she doesn't know the book. Maybe I'm just reading too much into it, but I couldn't decide
if she was like not sure of what he meant, like what's Robinson Crusoe, or if it was more her kind of being taken aback as to what that meant, because Friday being, if I'm remembering correctly, like a native that they basically took on as a slave.
True.
That she would see that as an offense because of how they were using this ice warrior. And so when he said, "Oh, you know, like Robinson Crusoe," she's like, "What the heck? You know, why are you taking this human to be a slave?" That was how I read it, as opposed to her not knowing what Robinson Crusoe was.
Ah, I see.
So I don't know.
Maybe.
We'll have to ask Pearl Mackey at the next convention.
Or Geddes the next time he's on our episode.
Yeah, our next interview with Geddes, yeah. So it kind of ends in an interesting way with, you know, the Colonel finding out about his past and how he had survived the hangman's noose. He was a coward, and he ends up saving the day as Ketchlove was trying to ruin everything. He comes in and shoots Ketchlove and saves the Empress's life. So, which turns into him vowing his allegiance to her, which the Doctor seemed completely okay with, but I was thinking this might not be a good thing for him. Because she seems still like she's a bad guy.
Yeah. I don't know. He wanted to do it. The Colonel, he seemed like, I was more confused why he thought it was a good thing. Like,
I think he thought she was just going to kill him. And he was like, "Okay, I can die honorably." And then she's like, "Nope, you're going to die in battle. And you're, you know," and he's like, "Yeah, I'm yours." So I guess he's just going to be hanging out with the Ice Warriors. I don't know. It was kind of a weird ending for that character, I thought.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of awkward as he's in a steampunk suit the entire time. Maybe they're going to make him one of their biomechanical armors. That'd be awesome.
We got something similar in our rewatch of the Chibnall episodes, when you had the two scientists, or the driller guy and the scientist that stayed behind with,
yeah, you're right.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yep, you're right. They stay behind with the lizard people underneath the ground. Yes. That was the Hungry Earth.
Right. So it reminded me of that, where it's kind of this, okay, we have a couple humans that are going to be living with this alien race, and they happen to also be reptiles. I don't know if that's going to play into the future of this species, the Ice Warriors, or if it's just kind of, I don't know. Not sure what kind of future this poor man's going to have.
I was going to say, you know, this guy's going to die the first battle that they have. I know. It's just going to be like, oh, wait, this was a terrible idea.
His prospects for a long life are not great.
No, everybody else is like impervious armor, and he's running around in copper.
So, yeah. And then we get this whole Alpha Centauri reference.
Yeah.
Which classic Doctor Who fans were thrilled about. Me as...
They are freaking out right
not
now.
Not as caught up on the classic stuff. I was... I knew it when it happened. I knew it was a reference to something. They made too big a deal out of it for it just to be a random thing. Right. So I was like, okay, this is a reference to something from the classic series, but I don't know it.
Yeah.
And I will be completely honest with you, between the time of watching this episode and now, I haven't had a chance to even look up what the reference was. I don't know if you did.
I was going to say, you're going to put me on the spot right now.
I was hoping you did your research.
I did. I Googled it as soon as it happened, and then I've forgotten what the big deal was.
Apparently, there's a classic Doctor encounter with the Ice Warriors, and it has something to do with Alpha Centauri. So this is, from what I picked up, this is actually a prequel to that happening. So the 12th Doctor, you know, kind of facilitated something that happens to, I think, the 3rd Doctor, if I remember. I don't know. So for you classic fans that know all about this stuff, I'm sorry. I don't know the story, but it definitely makes me intrigued to go and try to find those episodes and watch them.
You pretty much picked up everything that I picked up, is that it was a big deal because it made it a prequel in one way, but...
Yeah, it's the timey-wimey stuff. You know, you have a future Doctor that affects something that happens to a previous Doctor, so that's kind of cool. I just don't know exactly what happened. So if you are a listener of our show and know all this classic stuff, maybe shoot us a message on Facebook or email. Let us know what episodes we need to go look up.
The Curse of Peladon.
Oh, it would have been more fun if they sent us a Facebook message.
Oh, sorry. Send us a Facebook message. Edit that out.
The Curse of Peladon? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, I'm probably getting the pronunciation wrong. So send us a Facebook message.
Tell us how to pronounce it. Yes. I know you had mentioned Talking Time Lords, another podcast, some friends of ours that do a Doctor Who podcast. But they, I believe, are both very versed in this stuff. So I'm sure that their episode will have all kinds of explanation as to the connection. So go check that out.
Yes.
There's your free advertisement, Jason.
Plug.
And Paul. So yeah, there was that, and so we get to the Missy stuff. We had kind of alluded to it earlier, but it seems like kind of an innocent thing. Missy shows up with Nardole in the TARDIS. The Doctor's like, "What is she doing here? You know I need to put you back in the vault." But she, at first, you're like, "Oh, you know, she seems like." Like, she's pretty, acting pretty normal. You almost feel bad for her that the Doctor's being kind of mean. But then she drops this line, and you're just like, what does that mean?
Yeah, like, he says, or like, oh, this can't be happening. And she's like, are you all right? And I'm going to have to put you back in the vault. Sure, that's fine. And then she kind of, like, walks closer to him. And he's like, what? And she says, but Doctor, please tell me, really, are you all right? And it's just the way that she says it, the way that it's delivered, and the way that she's looking at him. Like, I have no idea what she means, but it was unsettling, the way that she delivered it and how it was just left hanging.
It reminded me of David Tennant in how he delivered the line when he was basically questioning the
Harriet Jones.
Okay. Yeah, so that the way that kind of where he delivers that line, where I'm just like, she's saying something that has meaning, that the Doctor,
yeah,
you know, is probably like, oh crap.
Yeah. Oh, and I want to know what she is seeing that, like, we as the audience don't see. Like, she's a Time Lord as well. Like, what does she recognize about the Doctor that makes her ask this question? Or has she done something to the Doctor that is making her ask this question? Like, I have so many different thoughts going around in my mind as to what in the world she could be referring to.
Yeah. But it definitely opens the door for some pretty cool stuff. Because now we're seeing that, you know, you're kind of wondering where Missy's at. You know, is she kind of falling in line with the Doctor and becoming good? But then when you see this line and the way she delivers it and the way that she's looking at the Doctor almost in an intimidating way, you're like, oh, okay. Here comes Missy. Here comes the real Missy.
Yeah.
Brace for impact.
Yeah, she definitely is playing the crazy. I don't know, just the way that she said it. She was crazy. Something's not right with her when she says that.
Right. I was trying to look for a... Don't you think she looks tired?
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, that's how that reminded me of it.
Yeah, you're right.
And she's like, "Are you all right? You know, don't you think she looks tired?" You know, that instantly made me think of that scene. So,
I can see that.
But yeah, so I think overall, Empress of Mars to me is, I thought it was a pretty solid episode. I mean, if you're comparing it to this specific season of Doctor Who, it's been one of the episodes that I enjoyed. You know, there haven't been that many that I've really liked a lot. And so this one, I don't know if it's just because I'm comparing it to a low bar, but I actually really liked this episode.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a whole heck of a lot more than I expected I would enjoy it. Given that it was Ice Warriors, given that it was on Mars, and given that it was Mark Gatiss, I did not expect to enjoy this episode at all. Peek behind the curtain before I watch it, I told my wife that I don't want to do this tonight. Like, I didn't want to watch it. After watching it, though, it was like, okay, you know what? That was fine. And then the second time that I watched it, it was definitely more enjoyable than the first time I watched it. I would say this is probably a high point of the series for me. I don't know where I'd put it in my rewatch list, but it was good. It had enough fun to it that some of those weird things either made it more fun or were easily overlooked.
Yeah, it's a standout episode for me on this season, along with the pilot and the wood lice episode. And then this one, I think, are the three episodes that I've enjoyed more than the others.
Your top three?
I'd say that's my top three right now, just off the top of my head. I'm not putting that much thought into it, but yeah, off the top of my head. I think they represented the type of Doctor Who I enjoy the most, and I felt like they had the best kind of secondary actors that came in and had some really interesting characters. This, I really thought this episode, Empress of Mars, was full of interesting characters. You know, the Doctor didn't have to carry this episode.
Yeah. So. No, I would agree. He didn't have to carry the episode in this one. I'm not sure where I'd put it in the series, to be honest, but it definitely was a pleasant surprise. And I'm super stoked for the next one.
So the next one, Eaters of Light.
Yeah.
We've gotten a trailer, or I think we've gotten a few clips, and we've gotten some promo pics. I've been out of town for a little bit, so I haven't had a chance to kind of look at a lot of this stuff. So any thoughts on the promo pics that we got? I'm actually just pulling them up now and seeing them for the first time. Looks like we have some... Oh, okay. Looks like we have some, like, Roman warrior types, and yeah, people with tattoos on their faces.
Yeah, Romans, and then barbarians, possibly Celts.
Okay, yeah, definitely barbarian like.
Yeah, but
the Doctor, there's some kind of, you know, old structures and torches. And wait, is that Doctor carrying a spoon? No.
A big wooden spoon. Possibly a mirror.
Yeah, let me click
either
on
that. Either that or he's playing a wicked game of ping pong.
Yes. Now, upon a zoom in on the image, it does look to be more like some sort of mirror, or maybe even magnifying glass. Not a spoon. We just know he's good with a spoon. So
I think he might be playing ping pong.
Yeah, so Celtic. Yeah, it does look Celtic. Looking at the landscape and stuff. Nardole in a bathrobe. I really don't know much about this episode. I don't think I even remember the synopsis for this one.
Yeah, I don't know the synopsis. I know the trailer basically sets it up where Bill, he's looking for Bill. There's some creepy monster thing going through the woods, and there's a Roman soldier. And I think at one point Bill gets stabbed in the shoulder, but I could be misremembering the trailer. Outside of, I mean, it looked like a fun episode. Plus, it has Romans. I mean, anytime you get a Roman in a Doctor Who episode, it's going to be good.
So yeah, it looks like they're going back in time again. Romans, barbarians, whatever. And I tend to like those kind of episodes. So we'll see. I didn't see Missy.
I was going to say, she's definitely missing from the promo pics. There is no Missy in the promo pics.
Although I don't think Missy was in the promo pics or anything for this episode, Empress of Mars, either. So you never know. In fact, I felt like maybe I just missed some things, but this episode, Empress of Mars, there were elements to it that I just didn't. I was like, oh, I didn't know that's what this episode is about. I literally thought it was just going to be about the ice warriors. So when they threw in the whole element of like the British soldiers and stuff, it kind of took me by surprise, maybe because I just hadn't really looked at a lot of things previous.
Yeah, I think they did a fairly good job in the synopsis, keeping it relatively generic in regards to what was taking place, because I was somewhat surprised as well. I think in the promo pics, I mean, in the trailer, they did have like the whole British army and the gators. I didn't realize it was on Mars, though. So, I don't know. There were a couple disconnects in my mind as well.
Yeah, and I think you know my opinion on this. Doctor Who would do much better for themselves, I think, if they did kind of try to keep some of this stuff under wraps and allow things to surprise people. So, maybe with a new showrunner, we might get a little bit more secrecy.
We'll definitely see.
So, and then we did get a synopsis for the finale. So, that might be worth a mention.
Yeah, it's kind of a very basic synopsis, which is good, right? It's the finale. We don't want to spoil it, but it's honestly probably 10 words.
Oh, yeah, you're right, it is. So John Sim is going to be in the finale. Is that, you had said before we started recording that we now have an official, you know, episode he's going to be coming back in. Is that it? Is it the finale?
No.
Okay.
No.
Is it public knowledge? Have they announced it, or is this rumors?
Ooh, I don't know. It's been on a few articles I've read. I don't know if it's been announced or not.
Okay, well, we'll just say, just in case, spoiler alert, that you may not want to know this if you don't want to be spoiled, but what's the news? When is he coming back?
It's been said that he's coming back on the 24th, which is not this episode, but the one after. So episode 11, The World, Enough in Time.
Okay.
So June 24th is when we're going to see him.
June 24th. And then The Doctor Falls is the finale.
Yeah.
Which we know he's going to be in as well.
I'm not sure about that. I think there was...
So here's the synopsis. And it says here that it was written by Stephen Moffat, directed by Rachel Talalay. And like you said, it's very short, but it says the Mondasian Cybermen are on the rise. It's time for the Doctor's final battle. That's not a synopsis.
I know, that's definitely not a synopsis.
That's just a line. But it does go on to say, and I think this is a part of the official release, it says the cast, including John Sim as the Master. See that?
I do yeah. See that.
Michelle Gomez guest stars as Missy, and John Sim stars as the Master. So she's billed as a guest star, but he's billed as a star. I wonder if that was in his contract.
That he had to be referred to as the Star.
Yes. And he is referred to as the Master. She's just Missy.
See, I believe early on, like Missy said, that it was going to be more than one episode with John Sim. So with him showing up, The World, Enough in Time, I mean, he obviously is in this one as well. So there's going to be two episodes that we get him and her together. That's going to be weird. Two whole episodes.
I can't wait. That's interesting. I'm actually really excited for that. for Sim coming back, just to get the nostalgia of his character from the 10th's era, and to see him and Missy interact. I think it's going to be really fun.
It's just, I mean, wow. I thought it was just going to be like a brief moment, and I don't know why I thought just a brief moment if there was already the rumor of multiple episodes, but two full episodes of John, Sim, and Missy together. That's going to be fun.
Is this fair to Capaldi to have him go out, you know, having to act against characters that are almost as big as he is? Somebody like Sim could even overshadow.
I don't know. We are 3 episodes left. In by July 1st, 2-3 weekends, we'll get to the last episode of The Doctor Falls. What does that mean? Does that mean that the Christmas special truly will not have Capaldi in it?
No, Capaldi will be in the Christmas special. Capaldi will regenerate in the Christmas special.
So there is no regeneration in The Doctor Falls?
No. How many times have we gotten misleading titles toward the end of a season? The Next Doctor. Remember that? You know, that type of stuff. We've definitely... This is just a misdirect. The Doctor does not fall in that he's not going to die, or he's not going to regenerate, at least in this episode. At least that's my bold prediction. I think it's pretty fair to say that they're going to give Capaldi his finale. They're going to give him his last Christmas special.
And you know what? He's going to wake up on the Christmas special and it's going to be memory crabs.
I was actually thinking that this episode, as we were watching The Empress of Mars, I was thinking, wait, what if the finale, they realize that they're still in the simulation from the monks?
It's possible, right?
Or here's another more crazy theory that that I'm sure I'm not the first person to come up with, but it actually crossed my mind. I was thinking, what if Capaldi in his finale realizes that he's just been in a simulation with the monks the entire time, and Matt Smith never actually died?
What if
the next Doctor is Matt Smith? They just brought him back.
or what if John Sim is just the flag saying that the 10th never left? Capaldi and Matt Smith never happened.
Capaldi and Matt Smith were both part of the simulation?
Yeah.
Wow. And then David Tennant shows up, triumphantly returns as the Doctor, and everybody's happy again.
And John Sim pulls him out of the simulation.
And the ratings just skyrocket.
I don't know. I
like these theories. I think they're fun, and you know, we could even get crazier. John Sim comes back, and then we realize he's not actually the Master, but he's the 13th Doctor.
he's just gone into another face that he remembers.
Right. The greatest hits. Right. That's what Tom Baker said.
You know what we haven't talked about? The First Doctor. When is the First Doctor coming back?
Oh, yeah. That was the whole rumor. You know, that could have just been a rumor. You know, there was never much after that. We got kind of those rumors we talked about, but there wasn't much to confirm it. I mean, it could be a Christmas special thing. They saved that for the Christmas special. But yeah, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of room left in the season for that type of a storyline.
I know, right? We got, I mean, not going to happen in Eaters of Light. So world enough in time where the Doctor falls. What if it's just a cameo? What if he has some like major flashbacks and the First Doctor like shows up?
It could very well be a cameo. They show him, you know, even from a distance, but use the same actor that they used for the movie. So Adventures in Space and Time, I think is what it's called, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So yeah. And I think I wouldn't expect much more than that. If they did show some sort of a cameo featuring the First Doctor and that's all we got, that I would just be like, okay. You know, I'm not expecting some full-blown storyline where him and, you know, Capaldi work together. If that happens, that would be really cool. But I feel like that's wishful thinking at this point. We haven't gotten any indication that that's going to be a thing.
So get this. The First Doctor wakes up in the simulation. none of this happened.
That would be going too far. I mean, come on. We could wipe away Smith and Capaldi, but let's not wipe away Tennant.
Or Eccleston. I mean, come on.
No, I mean, it would be ridiculous. Definitely not going to be what happens, but hey, you never know.
All of a sudden, it's black, and you just hear, "Grandfather!" And then the first Doctor wakes up. And we're back in the beginning.
I had the strangest dream,
and you were there.
All right, and okay,
we're way too far off course right now.
With that, I think we're ready to wrap up this episode of Bad Wolf Radio.
Sounds good. Have fun with editing that.
So, as usual, you can find us on iTunes. You can also leave us a review on iTunes. So if you have not done that, if you listen to our show and you enjoy it, we'd love for you to head over to iTunes and leave us a review. You can also follow us on Twitter at Bad Wolf Podcast, Facebook. We are Bad Wolf Radio on there. You search for us, you'll find us. You can also find our Facebook group, which is a pretty small group, some fun conversation going on. So we definitely would welcome you to join us. And you can find us on Instagram. Adam, I was disappointed. I don't think you did any Instagram thing this time.
I didn't do any Instagram thing this time. I failed. I really wanted to focus on this episode.
It's okay. You can take a call. You can take episodes off here and there, but we do have an Instagram account where Adam does occasionally post some fun things, including Instagram stories of live watching episodes. So I would recommend going to Instagram and following us at Bad Wolf Radio. You can always send us an email, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com, and you can find us on the Pod Tyrant Network over at geektyrant.com. So until next time,
later days.